from the number one sports site in the world. Yahoo! This is Yahoo Sports Radio. YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
The boy Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Maka.
Flags up in the
sky. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's five! It's a landslide!
Joe Lago and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's good in!
Right now.
Incredibly, within seconds.
From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Lago.
Greetings, soccer fans. I am not Joe Lago. My name begins with a Joe and ends with an O, though. I'm Joey Galino, a regular participant on this here FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Joe is off with his family today, and we certainly hope they're having a good time here in Los Angeles. But we are in the Playa Vista podcasting studio, and here with me is Shahan Ahmed.
I wore a tie today.
You do. You look spiffy, I'll tell you that. Alex Baker.
Not wearing a tie at all today.
That's all right. You still look better than I do, which can be said about basically anybody. And joining us via Skype is Leander Charlakins.
I imagine Joe sitting in traffic somewhere, so our hearts go out to him.
That's true. We're not exactly sure of Joe's specific whereabouts at this point in time, but again, we certainly hope they're having a good time. And you know, we have a lot to talk about on the podcast here. We'll take a look back at the Premier League action from this past weekend and look ahead to this weekend a little bit later. Plus, we'll also touch on the Panama Papers scandal that has engulfed a couple of big figures in the soccer world. But first, we're going to dive head first, like Marcelo, into the Champions League from yesterday and today. That was for you, Shahan. And there was games in Barcelona and Munich yesterday, and today in Wolfsburg and Paris, and that's where we want to start, in the French capital, where Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City played a pretty enthralling 2-2 draw. And there's a lot of talking points from that game, but I think the thing that a lot of people were reacting to at the very end was City got the two away goals, which could prove to be very huge. And Shahan, we'll start with you. What's your biggest takeaway from this match?
First of all, yellow cards. Yes. The accumulation, that's actually massive. Matuidi being out in the second leg is going to be huge. David Luiz, there's a joke going around, but that might not be huge, but he is out for say what you will about it. Yeah, and then, you know, Marco Verratti's been out for a little while. He, I guess, is possibly in contention to come back for the second leg, but it probably is going to be a little bit too soon. So right now, PSG is kind of in one of those weird spots where they're going to technically a 2-2, you know, level tie, but they've given up two away goals, so City definitely has the edge there. Plus, they're missing, you know, key components of their starting 11. So it's going to be a tough second leg for them. And, you know, the tie set up, they have to go and actually win the game. Otherwise, they're not advancing, you would think.
Yeah, I think Man City actually defied expectations today, too. And I think that maybe, you know, very much in this tie and can come away from this game feeling pretty optimistic about the second leg. They did well. You know, they were without Vincent Kompany, and that was a lot of question marks over how they're going to cope without him. And, you know, they weren't fantastic, but they managed to match PSG, who, especially playing at home, were pretty heavy favorites today. So I guess my main takeaway is that I kind of underestimated Manchester City.
I think that's go ahead, Leander. We want to get your thoughts on this, too. And, you know, I think a lot of people may not have been expecting City to get a result from this game. Or maybe they were. I don't know. You know, what was your reaction?
I'm actually surprised that City is still in this game because I think they were outplayed pretty comprehensively. I mean, the possession, I think, bears that out. That's not the only truth in soccer, of course, as we all know. But even though they went ahead and Ibrahimovic's equalizer was, shall we say, fortuitous, you also have to concede that City's goals were a little bit soft. They got the huge deflection and various missed clearances on the Fernandinho goal. De Bruyne runs away from David Luiz. Once again, I question if having to play without David Luiz is such a punishment for a team, especially when the margins get really, really small at this stage of the Champions League. But, you know, Paris Saint-Germain should have won that game. You could tell it from the reaction on their faces. after the final whistle, how they were terribly disappointed, and City looked really relieved. Paris Saint-Germain manager Laurent Blanc was super frustrated throughout the game. It's kind of, Manchester City has never gotten this far before in the tournament, and even though you could argue with the kind of budget they have that they should have, they're sort of playing with house money, whereas Paris Saint-Germain has gotten stranded in the quarterfinals now the last two seasons, I believe, and they're really expected to do more. They've invested so heavily, and they're built to compete in Europe. They should have gotten more out of this game, and instead, even though, you know, they didn't quite dominate, that would be too strong a word, but now City actually has the away goals advantage going back to Manchester, so a low-scoring tie will do for them. So it's I think it was a result that flattered City very much.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, to put some numbers behind what Leander was saying, you know, Man City got outplayed in the possession side 64-36, and then when you look at actual passes completed, it was 619 for PSG versus 261, so more than double the amount of passes, actually kind of coming up on triple almost. So it genuinely, you know, when you actually go back to the game and think about it, you had that penalty that Ibra took, you had what should have been a penalty red card before that wasn't given, and then you had that one-on-one with Ibra where Joe Hart came out into no man's land and he tried to do the curl around the goalkeeper and he just hit it a little bit too high and a little bit too hard. So those chances were there for PSG. They really should have put one or two more away. It was shambolic defending on the Fernandinho goal. There's no excuse for that. There really isn't. And now PSG really have no one but themselves to blame, obviously. It's funny that Ibra had those wonderful chances early, and the one he scores is I ran up on the defender, and it deflected off my foot and went into an open net.
That was a fantastic goal.
Hey, come on. That's how I score most of my goals. What's wrong with that?
I think when we look back on Zlatan's career, that will be remembered as the goal. Yes. Not that bicycle kick against England.
No, none of the others.
And there's even questions, really, over Rabiot's goal, because I think Ibra was in an offsides position, so that's a bit dubious. But, you know, just looking at possession for this whole round, I think that maybe, as Leander said, it's a little overrated in the sense, you know, Bayern dominated possession, they got a 1-0 win. Real Madrid dominated possession, they lost. Barca dominated possession, and, you know, they are kind of lucky to come away with a win. So I don't know if it's interesting that possession's not really being a decisive factor in these games.
Well, that's that goes back to the late, great Johan Cruyff, doesn't it? He said something like, I've never seen possession win a game or something like that. Possession is not a goal. I think he has a quote along those lines. And that was, you know, Martin Tyler made a really good point on the broadcast today that I want to bring up. And he said that for as much as PSG had the ball, and even whenever Manchester City had the ball, it's not so much that they were building something themselves. It's when possession turned over and the teams were able to counter a little bit that things really started to happen. And I thought that was true for the longest period of time. I do think that as fortunate as City was to get something out of this game, that PSG has to come out of this feeling pretty bad due to the yellow cards, due to the fact that they really didn't play that well, due to the fact that, frankly, Ibra was offside on the second goal and that should not have counted. And they've got their work cut out for them going to the Etihad next week.
Yeah, I just want to follow up that whole possession talk with a wonderful quote from last summer with Jorge Sampaoli, which I think we should all remember once I say it. Sampaoli's quote goes, "One night I went to the bar. I was with a woman. We talked all night. We laughed. We flirted. I paid for several drinks for her. Around 5 a.m., a guy came in, grabbed her by the arm, and took her to the bathroom. He made love to her, and she left with him. But that doesn't matter because I had possession most of the night."
Leander, you get the honor of following that.
Great.
I'll chime in with a Cruyff quote here. He also said, "When you have the ball, the other team can't score." So it really does boil down to the transitions, and I'm very fearful that there will be enough of these examples where teams will sort of stop worrying about possession so much, because when that happens, things turn back into the way they were in the 80s and the early 90s, where everybody was just defending, and most soccer was unwatchable.
Right. I think, and something else that, Shahan, I saw you tweet about, and I saw others talk about, Kevin De Bruyne being back for City has just made a huge difference. He gives them such a threat on the outside. He scored a goal for them today. It makes them a different team, both in possession and especially on the counter. And, you know, the joke about David Luiz not being there, potentially helping Paris Saint-Germain. The reason that it's funny, but it's also might be a little bit true, is because I'm not sure he's entirely suited to deal with those kinds of situations. And the outside attacking quality that City has, we'll talk about the back in a second, but the outside attacking quality that City has definitely boosted with KDB.
Yeah, I mean, De Bruyne, you know, you look at Wolfsburg last year, and they were competing with Bayern. They were a top-two team in the Bundesliga. And essentially the biggest difference between Wolfsburg now, who are eighth in the Bundesliga now, is De Bruyne. And he's that type of a quality player. He, you know, he's coming off an injury, and there was actually, you know, it was a joke with Pellegrini. I'm not sure if it was a joke or he was just trying not to play his cards too early, and he was hinting that he might not have De Bruyne available because he played on the weekend, in which case everybody scratched their head and said, why the heck would you play him on the weekend if you had to pick one?
Because obviously, Bournemouth is such an intimidating place to play.
Exactly. Well, obviously, you know, he was available, and he was a difference maker today. He looked incredible. They took him off, obviously, because, you know, he is just coming back from injury, and you don't want to overextend your players when they're in that state. But yeah, I mean, he is a quality player, and, you know, I'll give a friendly shout out to Jesus Navas, who reappeared for the first time in forever and seemed to have actually a positive performance. But really, De Bruyne helps a lot, and I think a lot of what he does is he adds that creative force that doesn't put all the pressure on David Silva to get the ball forward, because De Bruyne can not just get forward, but he can finish himself too. He can create. He's just such a dynamic player. And on his goal, I just want to give, you know, go back to that David Luiz missing thing. It seemed like he was trying to do like a backheel flick clearance. I think, you know, when he was stumbling over his feet as De Bruyne got the ball, as that pass was played perfectly. I'm not saying David Luiz would have gotten there in any other capacity, but when you're watching it, it's almost like he was trying to do a flashy backheel flick when he couldn't get his feet together to be like, oh, maybe this will work. And, you know, yeah, I mean, there is, we've all seen David Luiz fumble around in the defense on occasion, so it might help out PSG in terms of really, you know, organizing and making sure they're not giving up goals when they go to the Etihad, because they need to score and they also need to win the game. They can't end with a draw.
Yes, let's spin that forward a little bit, because that's a good point. And we were just talking about some of the wizardly attackers that Manchester City has, and everybody agrees about that. Aguero is phenomenal. You know, David Silva is phenomenal. KDB is phenomenal. Their problem, as we all know, is in the back, where they gave up just that. I mean, Howler, excuse me, doesn't even do it justice for how bad and how lazy that touch from Fernando was to turn right into Ibrahimovic. And basically, it was just a deflection that knocked it into the net. And Otamendi has been less than good enough, I think a lot of people could agree on. And so you say that the second leg, a low-scoring affair, you know, just kind of a grinded-out affair would do for City. And I know they were able to do that in the previous round, but this is a much different caliber of competition. This is Paris Saint-Germain. So, you know, Leander, I guess we'll start with you. When you look at this second leg, or when you kind of spin it forward, what's going to be the big key to the second leg between these two teams?
Well, I think we kind of touched on it there. I mean, the defensive mistakes were just astonishing in this game. I mean, this was not a well-played game. They did not, you know, create chances so much as the other defense gave them away. I mean, you talk about David Luiz, there's an argument to be made that he should have been sent off in the 12th second. You know, when right off the kickoff, I believe it was Nicolas Otamendi played this long ball over the top. Luiz was out to sea, as he would be several times that day, and he sort of had to really tug Kun Aguero to the ground to stop him from going in one-on-one on Joe Hart. Then somehow he turns around and manages to sell a penalty in quite a sophisticated fashion that we tend not to see from David Luiz. And then on the Kevin De Bruyne goal, you know, that little back flick that he attempted that Shahan alluded to, you know, he kind of at that point had already lost his man and he was trying to recover. I mean, I'm reminded here of a quote by Paolo Maldini who said, when I have to make a tackle, I've already made a mistake. And that was the case here where he just ran away from him. And like we talked about, the other goals were were soft goals and bad goals to concede as well. So what you see, I think, especially with these new big money teams that have recently been bought together that just don't have all that much European experience yet necessarily, is that they don't do a good job of minimizing the defensive mistakes, the kind of stuff that they can get away with in their domestic leagues, but that really here at the highest level tend to be deciding. So I expect to see another game in the return leg, especially given the number of defenders that are either injured or suspended, is going to come down to those little niggling mistakes in the back.
All right, so let's just real quick, let's go around here. Shahan, what do you expect? Can we get a little prediction and breakdown of the second leg real quick?
I'm torn on this one, but I'll say PSG just because I think they are the better team overall, and they've been better throughout the season.
Yeah, I have to agree. I thought PSG were the favorites going into today, and I still think they're a better team, and I think over two legs they're going to demonstrate that.
Leander, would you like to chime in?
I think PSG takes it, but I think it's going to be nervy, and I think we might see some more extra time.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think PSG does the job. I think they went, you know, they went to Stamford Bridge last year and were able to do it. They went to Stamford Bridge this year and were able to do well for themselves. I don't think the Etihad is as intimidating. City is a little bit banged up. And I think that ever since PSG clinched the league, what, about a month ago now, they've kind of been struggling for something to kickstart their competitive fire. I think this will do it. City's defense is not good enough to keep them off the scoreboard. And I would pick PSG to advance as well. Now, let's move on to the other game from today, which we touched on VfL Wolfsburg a little bit earlier for the player they don't have, Kevin De Bruyne, but the players that they still have, while maybe not doing the job so much in the Bundesliga, did more than enough today against Real Madrid. André Schürrle, the ex-Chelsea man, drew a penalty kick in the 17th minute after being taken down by Real Madrid's Casemiro. Ricardo Rodriguez converted the penalty. 7 minutes later, Julian Draxler leads a great piece of build-up play, passes out wide to Bruno Henrique and crosses it in. Max Arnold finishes it. Those are the two goals. And Wolfsburg comfortably, more surprisingly than I think a lot of people thought, would beats Real Madrid 2-0. So, Leander, we'll start with you. This has got to be the kind of the shock result of this round so far, right?
I think so. It was a massive hangover for Real Madrid from the weekend Clásico that they sort of unexpectedly managed to get a result, get the win, sort of lulling Barcelona into a sense of safety, as I put it in my piece on FC Yahoo, and then kind of striking very late on. But the really pivotal point, I think, in this game is in the second minute, Karim Benzema played a great through ball to Cristiano Ronaldo, who scored. And it was one of those offside calls where even in the replay, in freeze frame, it's really, really hard to tell if it should have stood or not. I mean, it's just one of those where you can't really even blame the linesman. But if that ball goes in and now within 2 minutes Real Madrid is ahead, away, that this is an entirely different equation. But of course they aren't. And then after 25 minutes, they're down 2-0. And they never really threatened all that much. Ronaldo had another look that was pushed wide by the goalkeeper. But the expected goals chart actually from Michael Cayley, who's the expert there, actually showed that Real Madrid should have had two goals in the game and probably should have won it. But it just wasn't their night. And it felt a little bit like they were still stuck in the same mindset as they had been against Barcelona, where they sat in a lot and they had plenty of the ball. But they also weren't all that proactive with it. And so it was a strange night. And now all of a sudden, the one tournament, I think, the one trophy that could redeem Real's season is very much in danger.
Yeah, I think this puts a lot of pressure on Zidane because, you know, coming off that El Clasico win, it was kind of a feel-good thing. Like, oh, you know, this guy might actually stay around for a while. And then to have this result, it's just such an unexpected result. It really is the shocker of the first leg so far. And, you know, I'll put some numbers behind it. You know, Leander mentioned that Real Madrid had more of the ball. They had 58% possession. They actually got 21 shots to Wolfsburg's 10, which is, more than twice as many shots. But Wolfsburg had more than twice as many shots on target to Real Madrid, which kind of tells you about that cutting edge that was just missing a little bit. And if you actually watched, especially the second half, I guilty as charged. I was watching the other game because it was just frankly sexier. And, you know, in the second half, I kind of went split screen to try and catch some of this. And honestly, the chances that were being created seemed like there were better chances by Wolfsburg. They were able to kind of expose Real Madrid's defense as kind of not being able to stay in position and work together properly. I don't know if that's because Zidane's trying something new or these guys are just, for whatever reason, just took Wolfsburg too lightly. And, you know, it's easy to do that, and I'm one of those people who also took Wolfsburg too lightly. But Real Madrid really just kind of laid an egg on this one.
Going into this round, though, guys, you know, we all saw the quarterfinal draw. If you had to pick a team that you would have liked to play if you weren't Wolfsburg, if you were Real or Bayern or Benfica or Barca or Atletico or PSG or City, you would have picked Wolfsburg. Because even though they're now actually having their best European season ever, this is their deepest run, they've been so bad in the Bundesliga, even though they have lots of really good, promising attackers, that's the team you'd want to play. But now, you know, you can certainly see Real turning this around at home and you know, putting a 6-0 beating on them or something, or even as many goals as they need. But, you know, now there's every chance as well that they hold on somehow, that they put in a gritty performance at the Bernabeu, and that suddenly they're semi-finalists.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. But I still think Real Madrid is going to come through. I think, you know, this is not an in-form Wolfsburg team. They haven't won a Bundesliga match since March 5th. Yeah, they've got a talented squad. They got some good, you know, cast off some bigger clubs they put together. They've got André Schürrle, another great Chelsea cast off, making difference in the Champions League today.
Sorry, Joe.
Yeah.
Wherever you are.
Wherever you are. Stuck in traffic with family. But I think Real Madrid did lay an egg. And there is some maybe element of the Clásico hangover, but I mean, there's going to be more pressure going on them into the second leg, and that could count against them. But I do fully expect them to do what's needed and to get through this time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much, you know, I know you guys said that some of the numbers favor Real Madrid. I'm not sure how much of that was them actually being at it today, and as much as maybe so much as them falling behind early after, what, you know, 25 minutes, 2-0, and having to compensate a little bit. In retrospect, and this, I love retrospect, I love hindsight, this might have actually been kind of easy to see, because you guys mentioned this result might have been easy to see happening. You guys mentioned the hangover from El Clasico. That win was huge. I don't think any of us were expecting it. Not only did they win at the Nou Camp, they ended Barcelona's 39-match unbeaten streak, which is a huge accomplishment and kind of a lost season, as Leander mentioned, for Real Madrid. So they have that hangover. They look at their opponent. They see that Wolfsburg, as you said, Alex, hasn't won in the Bundesliga in a month, and is eighth in the league, and they're like, well, okay, who are these guys? And meanwhile, Wolfsburg is saying, okay, well, we don't really have as much to play for necessarily in the league right now. Let's go out there and make a statement against Real Madrid. I mean, it all makes sense. You know, obviously no one could really see it coming, but maybe the signs were there for a result like this. But yeah, let's, again, just, you know, spin it forward to next week, Shahan.
Well, first of all, I'll say, you know, Wolfsburg lost 3-0 on Friday.
Yeah.
To Leverkusen. And usually, I don't know why, but when you lose in the league, it always seems to help in the Champions League.
Yes.
And so, spinning it forward, I think we might actually be looking at extra time on this one. I would say that Real Madrid's quality should come through, and I think it's not even the quality. I think it should be the experience more so, because I think Julian Draxler is a fantastic player, but I think that he's still young, and Wolfsburg, you know, they've overachieved already in this first leg. If I had to call an upset for this first round, I think that as much as I put Wolfsburg at the bottom of my Champions League rankings, I think that they're in position right now. So I think extra time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Leander?
I think a lot might depend on how hurt Benzema is, because he came off in the first half. And you know, Hesse is a fine striker, but they still really depend on Benzema to kind of connect the dots between Ronaldo and Gareth Bale, Cristiano Ronaldo, on either side of him. So if he were hurt, that would be a big loss, because this Real team is one that's capable of putting up enormous scoring numbers. As we know, they won a game 10-2 this season, you know, 5-0, 5-1, 6-0, 7-1. Those are scores that they have put up, you know, fairly recently. So I think and I expect them to run away with it. But if Benzema's not there, it's going to be a lot trickier.
Alex?
I'm going to agree with Leander. I think this Real Madrid team, they just put up such huge numbers so regularly that I think they can probably get it done against Wolfsburg and probably in regulation time.
Yeah, I think Real Madrid does the job too. However, one Wolfsburg goal, which, you know, I don't think it's beyond their own possibility. They score at the Bernabeu. That makes things very, very interesting. Well, you know, we mentioned the hangover for Real Madrid from El Clasico. That might have affected another team, the other participant in that huge sporting event, which played in the Champions League yesterday, Barcelona, of course, which is, you know, I think a lot of people still consider the favorite to win this entire competition. But they had a very, very tricky round of eight matchup against Atletico Madrid, who's not intimidated by them, who hasn't beaten them in quite a while. I think, what is it, like six or seven matches now?
Now it's seven.
Yeah, but they, again, you know, they play very good defense, Atletico does. They've been to the Nou Camp. They've been on this stage before. They're not scared. And, you know, we'll I'll just go through what happened real quick, and then we can react to it. Fernando Torres, El Nino, God bless him. He never fails to entertain. Scores a nice goal on a nice through ball from Koke in the first half. And that puts Atletico up 1-0 to the surprise of a lot of people, although at the time you couldn't exactly say it was against the run of play because it did seem like Atletico was settling into the game fairly nicely. Then 10 minutes later, Torres gets a red card, a second yellow, clatters into Sergio Busquets, completely unnecessary, no question about either one of those yellow cards, comes off. That kind of wakes up Barcelona. They score two goals in the second half. Luis Suarez scores both of them. So, you know, Barcelona emerges with a 2-1 victory over the first leg, and now they head to the Vicente Calderon next week to try to, you know, to try to win this tie. But again, Atleti has that valuable away goal, so this is a very, very interesting tie all of a sudden. What do you make of it, Sean?
Well, I mean, first of all, Fernando Torres, who will not be available for the second leg, obviously, you know, that was an incredible goal, incredibly idiotic for him to get sent off.
Just incredible
but all around. But before he got sent off, you know, Atletico actually looked like the far better team in that game. And then there was that moment where, you know, Griezmann got in and had that curling effort that Ter Stegen barely got his hands to. If that goes in and they're up 2-0 at the Camp Nou,
great save.
It's you know, it's panic time, even more than Real Madrid 2-0 away at Wolfsburg. It's completely panic time at that point because Barcelona really looked dead on their feet. They looked tired out there. And, you know, you can make excuses for the international break and you can make excuses that they've played. I think, you know, in the Clásico, it was 14 more matches than Real Madrid. They've had a really tough, like, long season, and they were under the FIFA ban, you know, prior to the start of the new year. They went and played the Club World Cup on top of that. It's easy to make those excuses, but Barcelona has been the best team in Europe, and they didn't look like it at all. You know, you looked at, you mentioned Suarez scoring those two goals, and you said that it kind of, the red card triggered Barcelona. Actually, I don't think that the red card necessarily did trigger Barcelona, because even up until minute, I'd say 50-55, even after the start of the second half, Atletico was still looking pretty comfortable and doing pretty well. But it was something, you know, it was Suarez, and something triggered him where he just seemed like, okay, I'm going to get into Energizer Bunny mode. And he started really going off. And, you know, there were a couple times that Barcelona hit the woodwork. Neymar had that fantastic curling effort where the keeper is completely beaten and he hit the crossbar. So Barcelona could have put in a couple more, and they really needed to put one more in, I think, to put this tie to bed. Because when you look at it, Atletico can go home to the Calderon, win 1-0 in advance. Mm-hmm. And you know that they want to win 1-0. They're not trying to win 4-0 or 4-3. They go out if they win 4-3. Yeah. But they're not trying to win, you know, by two goals. They're not that team. They're the team that scores one on the break, on the counter, however you want to see it, and then holds down the fort for all life. And they, you know, they can do it. They genuinely can. It's a dangerous scoreline.
They can do it. excuse me. I have to say that, okay. When Torres got his red card, I didn't necessarily mean, I don't think it sounded an alarm like right in that moment, but I, you know, me and Joe were in the office and we talked about it. Like, something happened in that dressing room where all those players came together and said, guys, what the hell are we doing out there? And, you know, they pushed Mascherano up into more of a defensive mid role. They wheeled those fullbacks forward. They kind of built, like, this impenetrable arc around the box for Atletico Madrid. And even the first goal that Suarez scored, I made note of this in the recap, which you can read on our FC Yahoo Soccer blog, which is where we all play our trade, so to speak, to a certain extent, that the goal that they scored, the first one, wasn't necessarily the vintage, beautiful Barcelona that we're used to. It was a long cross from Dani Alves that happened to fall to Jordi Alba. Jordi Alba tried to take a shot far post, and in the process of doing that, it came right to Suarez, who, credit to him, was able to guide it into the net in like a split second because he's of great ability. And then the second goal was a little bit nicer. It was another Alves cross that Suarez got a hold of for a bullet header into the back of the net. But yeah, it wasn't necessarily the best Barcelona team we've seen. It was a more motivated side in the second half, which could bode well for them in the return leg. But this tie has gotten a lot more interesting. There's much bigger questions about whether or not they're going to advance than maybe there were before we got into this.
Atletico has developed a very canny way of competing with Barca, which other teams have failed at. And what they do essentially is they clog the middle. And lots of teams have tried that against Barca and against Spain. It's just that they do it so well that they force Barca out to the wings to send in crosses. And now you're pelting crosses at, you know, Messi, who is 4'2", and Andres Iniesta, who's 4'3", and all these little guys. And Suarez actually helps them there because, you know, he can play directly a little bit better. He played in England, after all. But this is what Atletico has really achieved, and I think that's how they beat Barcelona 2 years ago. Let's not forget when they knocked him out in the quarterfinals. I mean, this is by no means over, but they just have figured out how to make Barca play to its own weaknesses, where they're sending in crosses, which, you know, worked out for them on those two plays, but generally it's just not where their strength lies because they just can't play through them at all. And so you see again and again that they're really giving Barca trouble.
Yeah, they do play well against Barca. The problem is they get a lot of red cards against Barcelona, Atletico. And I think this may be the downside of sort of the Simeone siege mentality. He gets these guys so revved up that they're going to go out there. And you look at Fernando Torres, I think he was trying to win the game on his own. He scores the goals. He's going off making these challenges that a center forward just has no business trying to make, these kind of challenges. And I think it was maybe the fallout from, you know, however Simeone gets these guys up for it. I think Torres took a little too far. But the two questions, and we'll never really know the answers to with them, but if Torres had not been sent off, how would this have turned out? And if Suarez had been sent off for what was clearly a red card offense, how would it have gone then? And we won't really know that ever.
Yeah, that's a real good point that we want to get to the last Bayern-Benfica match here in a second, but that's a really good point to make because it looked like Suarez kicked out at his countryman, Diego Godin, in the first half, which could have been a yellow, and he got a yellow for shoving Felipe Luis to the ground in the second half. So, Sean, I know you want to make one more point, but then, you know, after you do so, can you kind of just give us what you expect to happen in the second leg?
Yeah, I'll skip the point altogether. I'll just say
right.
I'll go to the second leg.
I think I'm it's sure kind it was salient.
It was, but, you know, we've moved on. Actually, you know what? I'll go and make the point. I saw this online. It was through Master Chipping that Barcelona has drawn 30 red cards, which is the most by any team in the Champions League. Second on that list was Bayern Munich with 20. So having 50% more red cards than number two, that's a pretty big gap.
Yes.
Now, you know, I was kind of messing around with it in my head and even thinking about doing a column on it. So I'll just share some thoughts on that in the sense that, you know, I think some of that has to do with the fact that Barcelona has such tremendous possession that eventually you just start kicking out at them. And it's one of those things where they form that rhythm, and when you break the rhythm, it's so much more pronounced and noticeable. Mm-hmm. And then you add in the fact that there is play acting, and Barcelona definitely does it. Sergio Busquets, I think you could give him some credit for drawing that second yellow card on Torres. But I think that's kind of it's probably a meld of those two, but I would actually put more of it on the fact that they do dominate to such an extent that teams do tend to kind of lose their heads a little bit. But in terms going back to, you know, making a prediction, I still think Barcelona is the best team. I think that they will have an extra week to recover, and I hope that Luis Enrique has, you know, the wherewithal to actually rest some of his guys this weekend, because I think they clearly need it. They were all in South America last week. They come back and they played El Clasico, what they really shouldn't have played. Neither team, if that's any other game, you really shouldn't play that game, because you have a Champions League game coming up 2 days or 3 days later. It was Saturday to Tuesday turnaround. I mean, it's just something that you shouldn't be playing that game. So I'm hoping that, you know, they're able to get their rest, and I would think that that's going to push them. I think it's going to be a really fascinating second leg, because Atletico can defend like nobody else.
Leander?
I think that it's going to be a seriously scrappy game again. I wouldn't be surprised to, you know, to see Atletico salvage a tie of some sort. I would fancy them to do that at home. You know, not to sound too English about it. Sorry, Alex. You know, I just can't see Barcelona not getting through. I mean, Torres being out isn't going to be super helpful for Atletico, because he is the kind of guy that can pounce on a moment and make a difference, even if he can also comically waste them. But I think Barca goes through.
Yeah, I'd like to say that Atletico could pull off the 1-0 at home, and it might be a victory for the dull, boring football of the 80s and early 90s Leander was talking about, but I don't see it happening. I think Barcelona's, they're going to come good in the second leg, and they're going to get through.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they play, who was it? I think Real Sociedad this weekend, and they kind of don't have a lot to play for. They're not really close to relegation, but they're also not threatening a Champions League spot. Maybe you do rest some people there with a 6-point lead in the league to make sure that you can advance in this second leg at the Vicente Calderon next week, so I agree there. And the last match yesterday, we've talked about Bayern Munich on this podcast already ad nauseum, so I'm sure our loyal listeners out there understand our feelings on the team. Just real quick, yesterday, they went ahead very early off a header from Arturo Vidal, and it looked like that Juventus momentum where they scored those four goals in the second half to win the tie from the last round was going to continue. Then they fell a little flat. Robert Lewandowski was off the pace in particular. He had a golden opportunity where he decided to be unselfish and pass it off to Philipp Lahm, but the touch was heavy. It went wide. Bayern was lucky not to get scored on a couple times in the second half. So Bayern takes a 1-0 lead into Portugal against what Pep Guardiola called the best one of the toughest center half pairings, one of the toughest defenses in all of Europe. So, Shahan, I ask you, is Bayern in trouble in the second leg, and what do you think will happen?
I think it's going to be interesting just because, you know, Benfica are champions and they're playing at home. That is, you know, great storyline there. There were a lot of chances that Bayern had in this game. You looked at attempts on target. Benfica only managed one to Bayern's five. Granted, Benfica did create some chances and they could have scored. But when you looked at the chances that Bayern missed, oh my lord, they really should have put in more than one goal in this game. The fact that they didn't makes it a little bit more interesting when they go there. But which team's better? I don't think there's a question. Possession was 64-36. We've talked already about possession earlier today, so I won't revisit that. But I would take Bayern to win this. I'll keep it short and sweet so we don't have to come back to me for anything more on this one, because I think one thing I will say, Frank Ribery looked really good.
He did.
Especially in that first game, or first goal. He was actually one who made the cutting run across to find Lewandowski, which ended up setting up the cross. And, you know, and then Vidal came across. So he might have been three passes away from the goal, but it was actually really good to see Frank Ribery back, because he's been out for so long, and especially with Robin out, they really needed Ribery. So I expect Bayern to come back, but I will be watching this one this time around a little bit more closely.
I will say that Bayern has a stupid amount of good wingers right now, even if Ribery and Robin are injured a lot, because they've got Kingsley Coman and Douglas Costa as well, which is just a ridiculous wealth of riches. But I think Bayern scores a few early away goals at Benfica, and the tie is over very, very quickly.
Yeah, Bayern's going to go through. I mean, it's, you know, all these ties are technically still alive, but I think despite the 1-0 scoreline, this one is the least alive of them. It's...
It won't be after the second leg. I'm calling the upset. I'm stirring the pot. I think Benfica wins 2-0.
You heard it here
first. Miracle. You heard it here first, and then they go through and Bynum is knocked out.
What's
and
your Twitter Pep address, Jay?
It's at Jay Gulino, G-U-L-I-N-O-L-A, if you guys want to throw any hate tweets at me. Yeah, but you know, that wraps up our Champions League talk. When we come back, like I said, we'll into the Premier League from last weekend and looking ahead, and also the situation with the Panama Papers, which we will explain to you if you don't know why it relates to soccer. You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Stay with us.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
That's the ultimate dadgummit right there.
Yep.
What a dadgummit. Dadgum that shot.
Roy Williams said when he was watching the last shot go into the air, it was helpless. It was not a good feeling. By the way, I'm not very good because I can't take away their hurt. I just told my team I loved them. I told them I wish I could have helped them more.
Can't take away the hurt. He could take away a failing grade, though.
And hey!
That was a cheater and liar.
Steve Zabin, mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio. Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show, yahoosportsradio.com. It's time to get back to everything, football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Ago.
Welcome back to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Once again, I am Joey Gulago. That's a amalgamation of my name, Joey Gulino, and Joe Lago, our regular host who's not with us. Kind of sounds like gulag, though, doesn't it, fellas? I
mean, indeed.
Maybe we won't go with that. I am Joey Gulino. And with me here in the Playa Vista podcasting studio is Shahan Ahmed.
Still wearing a tie.
And Alex Baker.
No clever prison nickname here.
And not Leander Charlakins, who, you know, during the first segment, he was being kind of obnoxious. And then, you know, he got his second yellow, and we decided to send him off on his merry way. We're just kidding. He had to bounce. But the three of us will take you home, and we will do so by discussing the Premier League from last weekend and this weekend. But first, we want to touch on a big story that's kind of engulfed really the world, not just soccer, this Panama Papers scandal. And just to explain it real quick for those who don't know, the other day, 11.5 million files worth of data and information were provided by an unnamed source to a German newspaper involving offshore law firms in Panama that... It's basically like everything you've heard from like Scorsese movies and people trying to hide their money abroad in these Swiss bank accounts, stuff like that. And it sheltered all manner of politicians, businessmen, administrators from taxes. It hid their true wealth, and you know they may have committed some crimes. And while we are a soccer podcast, not necessarily a news and political podcast, it did rope in Gianni Infantino, the newly elected FIFA president, and Lionel Messi, the superstar for Barcelona and Argentina, who we talked about in the first segment. And it's funny because Infantino just recently, you know, promised to stamp out the corruption and eliminate it in FIFA. And now here he is being involved in this with he potentially or allegedly made a deal back in 2006 when he was with UEFA, the governing body of European soccer, with a father and son who run a talent management company. And the deal was for Champions League rights, and I believe it was for $111,000, if you can believe that. The Champions League broadcast rights in this particular segment of you know, wherever it was, were sold for $111,000. And then those two guys he sold it to, in turn, flipped it, allegedly again, to an Ecuadorian broadcast company for like $311,000 or something like that. So you kind of wonder, you know, what wheels were greased to get this done, what bribery and corruption took place and things like that. And that's where he is being roped in on this. And, you know, like I said, Messi's also implicated. But, guys, I mean, you know, there's information still coming out. We don't have all the details or the facts yet. So I want to know, what's your reaction to this?
Well, it's early days, obviously, and it's going to be interesting to see what type of charges get, you know, worldwide, who gets implicated and who actually gets a case brought on them. The Messi thing is kind of interesting in the sense that he already has a tax evasion trial, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the elephant in the room at this point. This does not help. you know, when you mention the father and son team, you automatically just think about Lionel and his father because everything's pretty much been, Lionel's like, well, my dad did it. I signed some papers. I didn't know what I was getting myself into for the tax evasion trial. And this is, I'm guessing, going to result in the same type of defense. You know, if that's even necessary. But it's such early days that I think that we kind of have to wait and see and see, you know, what actually these implications are, whether this is just a way that, you know, very wealthy people worldwide, you know, store / invest their money, or if it's actually something that can be proven that they've done that breaks laws in various countries / the countries that they reside in.
Yeah, we want to be very clear. This is all alleged at this point. We're not accusing anyone of anything. We're simply acknowledging that these people have been roped in to this scandal. So, you know, Alex, I kick it to you. I mean, on a certain level, how disappointing is it that we're having more FIFA, well, it's not necessarily FIFA corruption talks, but corruption talks involving someone who is a big figure in FIFA?
Well, I mean, it's disappointing, but you can't, you know, it's not shocking. Like, oh, a FIFA executive?
No way.
No. As Shahan said, Messi's already got tax problems. So, you know, to reiterate, this is very much in the discovery stage of the whole case. There's 11.5 million pages of paper journalists are pouring through. But there's just so many different figures on different levels of politics and government and society and entertainment. I can't say I'm shocked that either Infantino or Messi have wound up among those names, and it would be great if it turns out to just be smoke and no fire. But
yeah, I mean, isn't it a prerequisite to be in FIFA to, you know, you have to some way embezzle money,
you have
to do something,
been corrupted, been indicted.
It's one of those things where they don't let you in unless you get your hands dirty. They don't trust you unless that happens.
If you don't have
an
indictment pending, you can't run.
Wait, what do you
office.
Mean you're not on the take? Yeah. You're not on the take? All right, we'll hold it for you. We'll hold it for you until you're ready to take it.
Yeah, we're just kidding. We love you, FIFA. We hope you keep on putting on great tournaments and all that. All right, so, you know, obviously we'll comment on that as it bears out in future podcasts, I'm sure. But let's return to the Premier League. Let's return to the pitch, so to speak, where this past weekend we had another big victory for Leicester City. Wes Morgan scored the only goal of the match, and they were able to take care of Southampton, which is a tricky foe. It was at the King Power Stadium, but it kept them. It pushed them to 7 points ahead in the league table because Tottenham drew at Liverpool. We'll get into that in a second, but first, you know, let's Shahan. What did you think of that Leicester City win?
Well, I mean, Wes Morgan deserves it. It was his first goal of the season, if I'm correct in saying that. You know, he's the captain, and he's been a stalwart in the middle of defense. I think that you really. It was good to see him get on the score sheet because he has been one of those not really unsung heroes, you wouldn't say, but he definitely, his name needs to be sung a little bit louder. He's definitely one of those guys that came through with this team in terms of the actual promotion. Yeah, I mean, Leicester right now, 7 points clear. It's really is a fantasy. I think I read there were, 5,000-1 at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the biggest upset in sports history, bar none.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even, you can't really put this into words that this is actually happening. Now, granted, you know, these type of leads have been overturned with less games left in the season, so it's not done and dusted, but I believe what they need 4 wins, and they've guaranteed themselves the league, mm-hmm. even if Tottenham wins, and that's assuming Tottenham wins all their remaining fixtures, which is not going to happen either. You wouldn't expect. So, you know, it's one of those things where, man, it would be tough to see Leicester blowing it now, especially the way they've been playing, and the fact that they did it with another 1-0 just goes to show you again how much their defense has improved from earlier in the season. I think if you look at them after Boxing Day on forward, their record defensively is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key. Like, their last 3 fixtures are fairly tough. If I'm not mistaken, it's some combination of Everton, Manchester United, and Chelsea. I think they end the season at Chelsea, which is funny because that was Claudio Ranieri was the last manager before Chelsea won the Premier League for the first time and really became kind of like this powerhouse club. So there'd be some irony there. And the key is, can they bank enough points to get to those 3 fixtures, which, you know, I think we all think that they could win them. But it is a tricky road to hoe, you know, no matter how you look at it. So if you can bank enough points and bank enough of a lead, then, you know, maybe you can give yourself some wiggle room. And like you said, they might even win it before then. Like, you never know. And one of the teams chasing them, which we talked about, is Tottenham, obviously. And they drew at Liverpool this weekend, 1-1. Liverpool went up on another great Coutinho goal. And then Harry Kane equalized for Tottenham with a great piece of skill where he was able to turn around a defender and slot it home to the far post. And Tottenham is now 7 points back, like I said. And they're the only realistic threat, it seems, at this point to catch Leicester City. And unless they win all their remaining games, I don't know if they have much of a chance to do it. So, you know, it's an intriguing race, but it's intriguing in different ways from years past, I'd say, because you have the little old club that could at the top of the table, and now Tottenham, who kind of wants to be that club, who for a lot of years has been kind of like the underdog, this might finally be their moment, and they might not even catch the team that's going to win it. So, you know, you definitely have an interesting dynamic in play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the match against Manchester United is going to be fascinating. And, you know, you were talking about Leicester's last three fixtures, United, Everton, Chelsea. Those are mid-table teams, right?
Yeah, they are. I mean, not the easiest places to play, but
no,
yeah.
No, they're not. Like, I know. I'm joking, but yeah. I'm not, because this season, those teams, like Everton, okay, yeah, they have everything on paper, but they just haven't been able to put those results together. Man United has been one of those teams that consistently you don't know what their consistency is, frankly. Mm-hmm. And then Chelsea, yeah, they've been better, but they're playing for nothing. And yeah, they'll be, so last game of the season at home, it's going to be great start with Ranieri coming back, because he was sacked for Jose to come in when Abramovich bought the club, and now he can go back to Stamford Bridge and basically do a victory lap, which, you know, the way it's looking, the league will be wrapped up by then. But Tottenham, you know, Tottenham, you would say on the balance, has probably been the better team in terms of actual play. And Harry Kane, you know, is leading the league in scoring, which I think has not been shouted out loudly enough. In England, they're probably very, very happy about it, because it's helping out the look of their Euro squad. But Kane's been incredible. Dele Alli's been phenomenal. And it goes beyond that, obviously. Their fullbacks are great. You know, Eriksen's come back into form. The Kane goal was actually something really special last weekend. It was Eriksen with, I don't know how he saved that ball from going out of bounds.
On the outside of his right foot.
Exactly. Yeah. He barely got it to Kane. And then Kane with the best turnaround / you know, snapshot that no one thought he was going to get that on target, let alone actually
see
do this.
That window of space.
But
that's
the thing. He is actually a legitimate striker of the ball in every sense of the word. And he was able to do quick turn, get his foot, laces through the ball. Beautiful goal. And, you know, Tottenham is, you could even argue, playing better football than Leicester. Mm-hmm. But Leicester has been able to grind out results better than any team in the Premier League. They deserve to be on top. They deserve to win the league, frankly. And if they don't, you would have to think it's going to be one of the saddest ends to the season as opposed to what looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't even think it's an argument that Tottenham play better football. But, you know, people have criticized Leicester for these 1-0 results. But what's a team like that? They're not going to start playing Yogo Benito at this point. They're you know, 7 points clear with how many games to go? Five?
Six
games to go. The finish line's in sight. They've just got to keep doing what they're doing. And it's kind of shifted. You know, it was all about sort of Jamie Vardy earlier in the season, but now it's been, I don't think he scored since the Arsenal loss. He hasn't scored at least the last 4 or 5 games.
I think he's on a dry spell, whatever the specifics
may
be.
But they still keep doing these getting these results. And
great sign.
You know, there's a saying, you can only ever beat what's in front of you. And mm-hmm. they're going out there. Maybe they're not spectacular. Maybe they're not playing any kind of flowing attacking football, but they're playing well enough to beat the teams they play. And
all you need to do.
That's all you need to do.
Ask Mourinho last year. You know, everybody has the boring, boring Chelsea chant, but when you really get into those winter months and then even on a little bit into the spring in the Premier League, you got to grind those results out, and they're able to do it. And, you know, it has them in good position. So,
yeah, just one quick add-on. I just quickly went and tabbed it up. They've only allowed six goals in the Premier League since Boxing Day,
That's
since they lost 1-0.
Wow.
And two of those were to Arsenal.
Yeah. That's December 26th to our listening audience who doesn't. That's the day you box your presents and everything up after Christmas in England, in case anyone's unfamiliar with it out there. But yeah, that's a fantastic stat that shows just how organized and disciplined they've been in the back, and that's what you need. And, you know, we'll wrap up today, this edition of the podcast, by looking ahead to this weekend real quick. Leicester has kind of, you know, they're at Sunderland on Sunday morning, and you say, well, Sunderland is a much worse team. They're in a relegation scrap, and that's kind of the key. They're in a relegation scrap. They have a chance to take the biggest scalp they've had all season, and they're going to come at Leicester. Do you guys think that Sunderland can get a point out of this match?
No. I mean, they could. They could, but no.
Yeah, will they get a point out of
this match? I mean, okay, obviously they can, but the fact of the matter is, yeah, Sunderland is playing a little bit better, but Leicester is the best team in the Premier League, and especially in terms of getting results, like we just went over. And when it comes down to it, you're still – they actually play better away from home, it almost seems like, because the pressure's off. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're fazed by playing these lesser sides. Frankly, even if they did get a draw, would it really be the end of the world? You don't see them losing that game, really. They've just – The fact of the matter is somebody pops up for them every single week and they get results because it's not necessarily one person, and they actually are a solid team in the back, and they have really good balance when it comes to finding those goals. And yeah, it's not just Mahrez and Vardy anymore. It has been the role players, so to speak, that have come through for them. So no, I see them. I see them getting another result, and I think that they're going to put the title away before the last week.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see Sunderland getting a result against Leicester City at this point, at home or not. I just think Leicester's just too good at navigating through whatever it is they need to do to get the result. And I think they're going to continue to do so.
I'm going to stir the pot again. DeAndre Yedlin Hattie gives Sunderland a 3-1 win over Leicester City. Jamie Vardy gets off the schneid.
And that Twitter address again is
Jagalino LA. Feel free to, you know, throw hate tweets at me. And one more big match this weekend we'll touch on real quick. Tottenham, the second place team, like we said, plays host to Manchester United, which is still scrapping for a Champions League spot. That's a big match no matter where the teams are on the table. Real quick, guys, does Tottenham fall further behind Leicester, or do they close the gap a little bit? Do they get those 3 points?
This is a tricky one just because I think Wayne Rooney should be back for this one. So now it's going to be a really tough decision for Van Gaal to decide who he sits down, because, you know, Lingard, Mata, you've had Martial playing well, and Rashford's actually looking like the real deal. So to take any of those guys out, let alone Memphis, you know, who can't get in right now, you kind of have to figure out where you want to stick Wayne Rooney, because, I mean, it's the same type of issue that England's going to have this summer, is where do we find place for this guy, because he is the captain of the team. And if he's healthy, how do you keep him out, especially out of an important fixture like this? They're in the Champions League run. They're for fourth spot, right in the race for it. They're 1 point back of City, I believe, and they, you know, City playing midweek and playing midweek again next week for Champions League. United could really catch them, you know, taking their eye off the ball, quite figuratively and literally. And so I think that that's a really, really important fixture. I think that if I had to choose, I would say a draw, just because this one's at Old Trafford, correct?
This one's at White Hart Lane.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'll take Tottenham. quickly change that to
yes.
Yeah, I got to go Tottenham too. At White Hart Lane, they're the in-form team in the Premier League right now. They're playing the best football. I think they're going to be too much for Man United at home.
I agree. I think that Tottenham scores a late goal, though. I think we're looking at like a 2-1. I think Rashford or Martial or maybe even Rooney, if he comes back, does something for United and makes it very interesting.
Yeah, so just before we duck out of this, I do want to make a quick mention that AC Milan's playing Juve in Serie A. Just my, you know, regular Serie A plug. That is another game that we probably were not going to mention. So
yeah,
you know,
2005 is really fascinated by that match. No offense to the Serie A fans out there. I'm sorry, that was a mean.
No, he meant direct offense to the Serie A fans.
I apologize. And on that terrible note, Jagalino LA, one more time. That's my Twitter account if you guys want to take it out on me. But you can read our writing at the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports, and you can subscribe for free to our podcast on iTunes now, the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. We thank you guys for joining us again this week. We'll be back next week with more Champions League, more Premier League, and maybe more Serie A slander, depending on what mood I'm in. For Shahan Ahmed and Alex Baker and the departed Leander Charlakins, I am Joey Galino. Take care, everybody.